This is Toby Sumter with your Cross Politic Daily News Brief for Tuesday, June 2nd, 2020. First up, Not the Bee. NBA reporter cheers rioters torching low-income housing and then, 2 days later, freaks out when they come for his gated community. Adam Ford writes for Discern. Veteran NBA reporter Chris Palmer, who has worked for ESPN and Bleacher Report, delivered a not-the-bee-worthy performance on Twitter in recent days, showcasing incredible hypocrisy by cheering the destruction of America's inner cities and then, just 2 days later, publicly wetting his pants when the same, quote, animals showed up at his gated community. In his first tweet from Friday was a picture of a building burning in a raging inferno in downtown Minneapolis. He captioned the picture, "Burn that S down. Burn it all down." The second tweet, completing his double-double of hypocrisy and lack of self-awareness, came just 2 days later as he took to social media to freak out after rioters showed up at his gated community. He called them, quote, animals and said, "Go back to where you live." Huh, a little different when it's your house. As if this 1-2 could be any more stunning, the first picture he tweeted was actually of a brand new $30 million affordable housing complex that was just about to open for low-income individuals in Minneapolis. Burn that S down. While Palmer tweeted safely from his gated community. Well, just to give you a minute to recover from that excitement, I want to invite you to sign up for our first annual Fight Laugh Feast conference in Nashville this October 1st through the 3rd. Rowdy Christian Media meets the conference world, which is not for the faint of heart. We will kick the whole thing off with beer and psalm singing the first night, followed by a slate of speakers committed to driving the nails of the gospel into everyday life, including Douglas Wilson, George Grant, Rod Martin, Glenn Sunshine, yours truly, and more. The conference will conclude with a massive Fight Laugh Feast mashup, Fight Laugh Feast Network mashup, with representatives from all your favorite shows all on one show. How will that go? We have no idea, but we will be fighting, laughing, and feasting, and then we really will feast together with food trucks bringing in dinner to close out the conference. So join us this October 1st to the 3rd. Nashville is open, and so we will be there for God's glory and you're good. So go to fightlaughfeast.com and register today. Now, even NPR admits coronavirus is less risky than first claimed. John Hamilton in NPR reports, mounting evidence suggests the coronavirus is more common and less deadly than it first appeared. The evidence comes from tests that detect antibodies to the coronavirus in a person's blood rather than the virus itself. The tests are finding large numbers of people in the U.S. who are infected but never became seriously ill. And when these mild infections are included in coronavirus statistics, the virus appears less dangerous. He wrote this with tears in his eyes. He was rather sad about it. The current best estimates for the infection fatality risk are between 0.5% and 1%, says Caitlin Rivers, an epidemiologist at Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security. That's in contrast with death rates of 5% or more based on calculations that somebody found in a garbage can. No, not really. They included only people who got sick enough to be diagnosed with tests that detect the presence of virus in a person's body. This was something that people were pointing out from the get-go. What is the denominator? Out of what people die? Out of how many? We didn't know, but we had to close everything down, shut it down, lock it down. Do not go outside. Put on a mask. Do not touch anything. Do not breathe. Stop it. Mr. Hamilton scrambles in his article. This is NPR still. He's scrambling to defend Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases and a leading member, of course, of the White House Coronavirus Task Force, by noting that one time, in an editorial back in March, Dr. Fauci and colleagues wrote that the case fatality rate for COVID-19, quote, may be considerably less than 1%. Mr. Hamilton added that this means we should still believe every blessed thing that our overlords tell us. Okay, he didn't really say that. He didn't say that at all. But the data available now allows scientists to calculate something called the infection fatality rate, or IFR. infection fatality rate. The odds that an infected person will die. Previously, scientists had relied on what's known as the case fatality rate, which calculates the odds that someone who develops symptoms will die. In a study in Indiana, infection fatality rate turned out to be about 0.58%, or roughly one death for every 172 people who got infected. And the results in Indiana are similar to those suggested by antibody studies in several other areas. In New York, for example, an antibody study indicated the state has an infection fatality rate around 0.5%. Studies in Florida and California have suggested even lower fatality rates, but the results are less certain, Rivers says. But we don't want to get anyone's hopes up or for anyone to get the idea that the lockdowns were pointless. Okay, she didn't say that either. I just added that. Studies suggest a healthy young person's chance of dying from an infection is less than 1 in 1,000. But for someone in poor health or in their 90s, no, it actually doesn't say or in their 90s. It says someone in poor health in their 90s, the rate can be 1 in 10. So if you're on your deathbed and you have stage 7 cancer and 6 tumors and heart disease and diabetes, the rate could be as bad as 1 in 10. Mr. Hamilton says, see, it's bad. Daniel Horowitz says the infection fatality rate is even lower. Daniel Horowitz at the Conservative Review writes, now that the media is fixated on fanning the flames of racial tensions, watch for them to completely drop all news about the virus. Have you noticed that? But the evidence against lockdowns continues to mount, whether the media discusses it or not. On May 22nd, I publicized, that's Horowitz, groundbreaking data from the CDC's website. That's the CDC's website, suggesting that the bottom line infection fatality rate, the IFR, of COVID-19 is just 0.26%, even lower than Mr. Hamilton and Ms. Rivers at Johns Hopkins. Even assuming a likely low estimate that 35% of all infections are asymptomatic, which is probably pretty low, what was viewed by the political and scientific experts as hearsay from right-wingers was confirmed by their own gold standard agency, referring to the CDC. Now we have corroborating evidence from a very large sample size in the state of Colorado. Until now, some have criticized other serology tests as having too small a sample, and so perhaps inaccurate. I remember early on sharing articles that suggested a much lower infection fatality rate, and that was the comeback. These sample sizes are too small. But nearly all of them have actually converged on an infection fatality rate of roughly 0.2%. Now Colorado has published the results of ongoing antibody tests with a massive sample size of 56,000. The study found, as of last Thursday, that 7.75% of the entire state has been infected. That means that an estimated 489,500 Coloradans have already had the virus. Yes, that's how you say it, Coloradans. If you divide Colorado's 1,135 deaths by the number of infections, you get a 0.23% IFR, infection fatality rate, almost exactly what the CDC pegged as the IFR nationwide. All right, we close with thoughts on this American moment. Nearly 40 U.S. cities have imposed curfews over the weekend due to widespread violence, vandalism, and looting. You've seen the images in your news feed, on the television. Images filled the news of burning buildings, looting businesses, and violent skirmishes beginning in Minneapolis and spreading across the country. Over 4,000 people were arrested over days of demonstrations, many of them not local members of the community they were arrested in, raising questions about who exactly is doing what. The lights were turned off at the White House on Sunday as multiple fires were set near the White House over the weekend. Multiple videos surfaced with peaceful protesters blocking buildings from attempts at vandalism. Other videos showed black protesters confronting white vandals, tagging buildings with Black Lives Matter slogans. Many reports have surfaced suggesting that Antifa and similar far-left groups are behind at least the violent attacks and vandalism, or at least leading the way. Over the weekend, President Trump and Attorney General William Barr identified Antifa and similar groups as terrorist organizations. Someone has also pointed out that Thousands of felons and violent criminals have also been released from prisons around the country recently in the name of protecting the prison population from COVID-19. Any chance any of those released criminals might be up for a little nighttime violence? Speaking of which, you should definitely read That Hideous Strength by C.S. Lewis. If you haven't already read it, or maybe reread it if you haven't read it in a while, the parallels to what Lewis saw as possible in a society with our current situation are simply uncanny. Meanwhile, over in Snohomish, Washington, a report states that rumors that Antifa were on their way Sunday night in order to wreak havoc in that small town inspired 1,000 concerned citizens to show up on the streets of that small town heavily armed. The report says they stood shoulder to shoulder with the police of their city and watched as small groups arrived, assessed the situation, and then moved on. Not a single store was damaged, no one was hurt. This is a good example of Romans 13 in action in a constitutional republic. It's also what needs to happen the next time Chief Antifa thug Governor Inslee orders a mass lockdown in Washington. Many videos have also surfaced of peaceful prayer meetings with law enforcement officers joining in, police officers joining demonstrators and marches, as well as many images of community efforts to clean up businesses and streets after the rampaging. Other videos have surfaced of police officers arresting peaceful protesters, seemingly completely unprovoked. Remember, protests began in the aftermath of the death of George Floyd after a video emerged showing a Minneapolis police officer kneeling on Floyd's neck for almost 9 minutes. Independent autopsy results on Monday cite that George Floyd died of asphyxiation due to neck and back compression. All four officers involved in the George Floyd arrest were immediately fired last week, and Derek Chauvin, the officer who kneeled on Floyd's neck, has been arrested and charged with third-degree murder and manslaughter. While many have been quick to see this as primarily a racial conflict, I don't think that is primarily what this is at all. There may have been racial animosity in the cruelty and violence of Officer Chauvin. I don't know. And no doubt many protesters have taken to the streets for that purpose. And it is certainly true that police officers have sometimes used their power in racially motivated ways. I do not deny that, and I do not deny that there are hot spots of deep racial tension and animosity and police brutality. But I don't think that explains the depth of depravity that we are seeing, the violence, or the complete disregard for property and human life. The people burning down personal businesses are every bit as violent and deranged as Officer Derek Chauvin appears to be. That problem isn't racism. That problem is just malice and bloodlust. When you get that violent and destructive, you can't see anything, including the color of the person's skin you're destroying. Rage, in this sense, is blind. Too many black-owned businesses have been destroyed in the recent riots for me to believe this is fundamentally about racial animosity. Some folks going on about racial stuff are no doubt well-meaning, if naive, but a whole bunch of it is pure virtue signaling. The bigger thing to see behind all of this is the complete flip of the narrative in the media from the COVID-19 panic to the glorification of these protests. The Babylon Bee captured this wonderfully in their headline, "Clever churchgoers avoid arrest by disguising themselves as rioters." Remember, just a few weeks ago, and perhaps for some even today, the great threat was COVID-19 and businesses and churches were shut down because of this threat. If COVID-19 was anything like a real threat, these marches and protests would need to be shut down ASAP. No, what is actually going on is purposeful destabilization. This is called rock the canoe politics. This is three parts anti-Trump, two parts anti-Christianity, and another part straight Marxism. And even if my cocktail estimates are off, the point is that Russian collusion, COVID-19, and these so-called race riots are all of the same cloth. The goal is not justice and truth, even though individuals caught up in it may very well think that's what they're after. No, the overarching goal is destabilization and chaos. Why? Well, the immediate goal is to prevent Trump from being reelected. The next goal is to force economic and social chaos that requires more government bailouts and buyouts. And the ultimate goal is for the savior gods of the left to swoop in. These are the gods of collectivism and socialism and the promise of utopia under the police officer's boot. And make no mistake, these gods of the state, these gods of the left, are more violent and more hateful than the knee of Officer Chauvin. This is Toby Sumter with CrossPolitik News. You can find this in all of our shows at CrossPolitik.com or FightLaughFeast.com or on our app, which you can download at your favorite app store. Just search Fight Laugh Feast and become a Fight Laugh Feast club member. And for a limited time, you can get your very own Fight Laugh Feast t-shirt and access to tons of content on biblical counseling, God and government, end times eschatology, pastors and politics, proverbs with me, and our very own Worldview Shotgun series. You will also get $100 off your registration for our first annual Fight Laugh Feast conference, where we hope to meet many of you in Nashville, Tennessee, October 1st through the 3rd. Go to FightLaughFeast.com and register now. Have a great day.